it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Buenos dias, chicas y chicos. Hello and welcome, a very warm welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, spreading and sharing the supreme delight of this wonderful and fast-growing game. I'm your host, Minter Dial, and this podcast is brought to you by Paddle 1969, the largest manufacturer of premium paddle courts, one court for life by Paddle 1969. The Joy of Paddle is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. For more information about the network, go ahead and check out evergreenpodcast.com. So this is the inaugural season of the Joy of Paddle podcast. And to start with, we're going to do an episode once every fortnight. Episodes will drop every other Wednesday at 12 noon London time. Please let us know what you think about the show by putting up a rating and review. So welcome to the third episode of the Joy of Paddle podcast. It's with my old friend Gabo Loredo. Gabo was my first real paddle tennis coach. He's a paddle phenomenon, a Mexican whose professional career began as a tennis coach for elite juniors. In 2010, he switched to paddle to become an international director and coach, having coached in Italy, Mexico, England, Estonia, Argentina, and of course in Spain. He's coached the Swedish and Finnish national paddle teams for both men and women, and he now lives in Sweden, running the Instagram-friendly Tasty Paddle along with Rika Lane, where they run clinics and camps. Please enjoy. Game on! My dear Gabo, it is so fun to have you on the show, the Joy of Paddle. You, sir, I think really were instrumental in bringing out the joy of paddle for me. How about, in your own words, Gabo, who are you?
Well, I'm a Mexican paddle enthusiast. I have devoted the last 12 years to paddle because, for what you said, I found it fun. And you know, I got very passionate about it. So that's who I am.
So tell us, so you're Mexican, Gabo, yes. the origin country of paddle with the Corcueras. Tell us your route to paddle, because you started in tennis, as I recall.
Yes, actually, you know, it's interesting because even though paddle, you know, was created in Mexico, I didn't know the sport until after college. I basically graduated in California. I was on a scholarship playing tennis. And then after that, I went back to Mexico. And then one friend called me one day and said, "Hey, Gabo, I need you to do me a favor. I'm playing this game called paddle, and I need to show up to this tournament, but my partner is injured. So I just need you to be there." And then I said, okay, and what do I need to do? I said, it's like tennis. Just be at the net and don't worry about it. And of course, it didn't go very well. But that's how I actually started paddle. And then, you know, obviously we lost badly. And then after that, I stay and watch the next matches. I watched the semifinals, I watched the finals, and I was in love with the sport. Wow. So after that, I went completely crazy with it. And I decided to change my life and my business. I was a tennis coach at that time. I had a very nice job in California running the junior program for 13 clubs. And I decided to leave that and basically relearn from scratch what paddle was about. And I don't regret it. I think it was a very good choice for me.
You clearly also moved to Spain, which is quite a powerful country for paddle. How instrumental was that in helping you get to learn? Or by the time you arrived there, did you feel already up to snuff?
Well, actually, where I started, Minter, was in Argentina. So after this story I was telling you that I went crazy with paddle, then I went online and found I Googled the best paddle academy in the world, and I was sent to Argentina. And that's how I met Jorge Nicolini. And basically he was my godfather when it comes to paddle, right? So that's where I spent about 8 months doing nothing but paddle. It was a beautiful experience, very hippish, because, you know, I was at the club all day helping with whatever, and I will trade, you know, cleaning the cafeteria or helping to swipe the club at night in exchange of training, food, you know, a place to sleep. So it was really nice. It was one of the best times in my life, even though, you know, it doesn't sound maybe as exciting, but it was. And I was basically always available to play with anyone. And then when coaches were coaching, I was always there, you know, showing them and just watching what they were teaching and trying to just get as much information as I could from paddle. And yes, then I started training myself. And basically in 8 months, I became top 25 in Argentina. So then my my godfather told me, look, there is that the only tour that is in paddle is in Spain. So maybe you should move there. And I was like, that sounds really exciting. So actually that was when, instead of World Tour, there was a tour called Padel Pro Tour. And that's when I came to Spain.
That's instead, the predecessor to World Paddle Tour, right?
Exactly, exactly. So that's how everything started. And then I ended up in Spain. I love Europe always. And then, well, I was able to get a job here and get started and just started doing paddle full time. And that's how I came here. But, you know, of course, I believe more in the Argentinian school and in the Argentinian method and all that. I of course, the Spanish method is fantastic, but they are very different, if you so ask me.
Give us the short understanding, description of the Argentinian method and the Spanish method. How do you describe
those? Well, I think
those?
You can see, no, also with the way the players play. I mean, of course, we're talking about professionals, no? But to me, the Argentinian way is a way to understand paddle as, you know, being very patient, very defensive, cooking the point, building the point from, you know, from the defense and using a lot of lobs, choosing very well when to smash, when to go for a winner, because otherwise, if you don't do it right, they will counterattack you. So it's a very defensive slash counterattacking way of playing. And I think the Spanish way is more, you know, especially the way paddle is evolving, is more about, you know, attacking, smash, go for it. The points need to be shorter. And I'm not so into that kind of style. Of course, it's a great style if you can perform it. And also the training, you know, I'm used to training with three balls in my hand. And that's it. We need to learn how to rally. We need to learn how to control the ball. We need to understand the pace of the game. And, you know, my experience with the Spanish academies is more about, you know, hit a lot of balls, hit hard, do baskets. It's very different. So I believe a lot more in the way, you know, Dineno and Stupa play more than in the way Coelho and Garrido and these guys.
I tend to love the defensive side of things as well, but then Gabo, your journey after Spain, you are running Tasty
yes.
Paddle. Tell us your involvement in paddle today.
Well, actually, you know, my plan at the beginning was to compete, and I did for a while, but then I became a father, and things became difficult. You know, to have the freedom to travel around. And then the tour started, you know, becoming more demanding that, you know, it was placed in different places and it was just difficult. So then I started running like my own academy kind of thing. And it went very well. I always also enjoy the teaching part of every sport. I really am passionate about teaching and coaching. So that's what I've been doing the last decade, basically. I found that there was an opportunity for me to grow my business abroad. Abroad meaning Sweden, Finland, basically Nordic countries, because I saw the need for English-speaking coaches. And also, to be honest, business-wise is probably the best option. It has been the best option in the last decade to teach in the Nordics because the prices are higher. People are very committed. They are eager to learn, and you know, it's been a great business model for me, and that's what I've been doing the last 10 years working with Swedish Federation, working with the Finnish Federation, and traveling wherever my services are required. Mm. And then we just started a brand also. Maybe it's been around for a year or so. And it's more for the fun of it also, because we couldn't find any racket that we like. So then we say, if I cannot find what I want, then I need to do it myself. So then we did our own rackets, and they are doing well, and we like to play with it. We are proud to play with our own brand, and that's basically what I'm doing, trying to show padel to as many people as we can.
So congratulations on all that. I'm the new owner of one of your rackets, Tasty. But the Swedish story is very intriguing. I mean, it is kind of an outlier for being such a developed padel world, perhaps overdeveloped according to some people. Tell us what your version of how Sweden, why Sweden is such a padel destination today.
Honestly, I mean, I'm sure there are many different opinions on this, but what I have seen, because, you know, I was there since the beginning. I was there when there was only one club in Helsingborg, in the south of Sweden, with five courts. And actually the guy, Anders Mattsson, that was the one that opened this club, he was criticized and told that he was crazy, that he was stupid, because he had a squash business and tennis business, and he refused to continue with that in order to open padel. And people laugh at him. And I remember that when he took us there, it was at the beginning, of course, it was like a trending thing. It was new, it wasn't easy at the beginning, but then he was, a guy with a vision, because, you know, padel became huge. I mean, it's huge in Sweden. And I think that the main reason is because padel will be huge wherever it goes, to be honest. Then Swedish have really get involved, not only enthusiast people, but also celebrities. Yes, we have people like Zlatan, the football player. We have one guy from Eurovision. That one Eurovision also is attached to this. We have a lot of soccer players playing padel, tennis players. You know, Jonas Björkman, former number one in the world in doubles, he's now the main guy for the federation. So, I mean, of course, when you see all these celebrities coming together, it makes it easier, no, for the sport to grow. And then Sweden is a country of tennis players. Amazing tennis players. I mean, you remember this generation of Edberg, Magnus Norman, you name
Bjorn
it.
Bjorn Borg, perhaps.
Bjorn Borg. I mean, there were many players. Yeah, so sure. I think that also helps, because padel is probably the perfect sport when you transition from tennis or any racket sport to padel. It's amazing. It's hard to describe how fun it is, you know?
And certainly... I'm based in the UK. I have lots of knowledge about padel in the States. Both of these countries are doing, you know, have a 200 padel courts compared to a Sweden or a Spain with, you know, literally 20,000 in Sweden. I mean, in Spain. But what is it that you feel is for sure why padel will succeed wherever it starts?
Well, I think it's because it brings people together. Also, it's a sport, Minter, where, you know, we actually had the chance to play together a month ago. And, you know, maybe our level might not be the same.
No, I agree.
But we are, you know, we are still sharing the same court, having fun. We both got a beautiful workout. We were sweating. We had fun. We had long points. We had, you know, I think there is no other sport in the world, Minter, where you can do that. Where you can have fun playing with people that are not exactly at your level, but you still enjoy the game. And it's very hard to describe, but to me, that's the magic of padel. You know, and then one personal thing, Minter, I always say, in tennis, I was very, very grumpy. I remember breaking one year close to 28 rackets. Yes.
Wow.
And, you know, and I'm not a person that misbehaves on court. I'm normally happy, and you know, it takes a lot for me to get frustrated. But tennis, in that way, I find it a very frustrating sport. When padel, it has never even crossed my mind to hit a racket on the ground or to get in a bad mood or frustrated. Like, I just always have fun playing padel. I don't know why. That I cannot explain. But there is always a big smile in my face when I'm playing padel. And that's something I cannot really describe why. But one day, maybe I will be able to do so. But there is something about the game that is just so enjoyable.
Well, this is maybe what the joy of paddle is going to be about, is finding out exactly why. So listen, I want to talk about you as a player. I'll get to some of your coaching ideas in a moment. But how do you describe yourself as a player? And the way I'm going to ask you is, what sort of animal would you say you are when you play paddle?
I think I have it very clear. I would say I'm similar to a panther.
A black panther?
The Black Panther, yes, why not? I think, you know, I'm very defensive, but at the same time, I do like the action. I like the fast game. Of course, first I need to build that situation where I can play fast. But at the same time, you know, I told you I'm a forehand player. And for being a forehand player, I have always been considered a very aggressive player. So that's what probably makes me an okay player on the forehand side. You know, I always say on the forehand side, I can make a difference. On the backhand side, I'm just one more player. Yeah, but...
It's interesting. It's sort of, when you look at the winning combinations, whether on the women or the men's side today, both the right-hand side, well, Delphi Brea, I'm thinking of in particular, and Dineno, have the ability to pop balls out of the court and have a very aggressive Iboras from the right. So they're not any, you know, slouches when you hit towards them. Would that be fair?
Yes, and not only aggressive with the shots, Minter, because of course at that level everybody has every shot. But you know, they many times are the leaders of the pair. They are very strong mentally, and that's something that sometimes people don't pay attention to. But you know, Dineno, for example, in that pair, even though Stupa is the one that, you know, wins more points and is the one putting the cherry of the cake and all that, the guy holding the team together is Dineno, eh? Is the brain, is the strong guy, is the leader.
And this is why he's your favorite player professionally?
I love him. Yes, also because I know him as a person, and I just love humble players. That's why also I really like the way Argentinians are, because in my experience, when I have met them in person, they are humble. They are what you see. You know, they don't become, you know, arrogant or impolite. They are always what you see. Same as Tapia. You know, Tapia is probably the best player in the world at the moment, and he's just so nice and so likable and so, you know, there's no drama with them, and I love that. I love that they compete. They always play hard, and if they lose, they are okay with it also. You know, they congratulate the opponents and they are happy. So,
and the other thing about Dineno, of course, is he had that horrible accident. So he came back from that, and that is also shows a lot of tenacity and
yes,
and
that was
will.
A very, very, very tough thing. And I hope actually, I hope one day someone will make a documentary about this, not just for paddle. You know, it's a very nice story and very inspiring, I believe. So hopefully one day he's willing to tell that story to the world, because I think it's amazing what he has achieved.
So you're gaslighting me here, Gabo. So you're speaking to a guy who's done a documentary film. Now I love paddle. I've done documentary. What are you telling me? Anyway, so what, all right, Gabo, what about your favorite shot and why is that your favorite shot?
My favorite shot is the lob. Boring.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Boring. Yes. Are you kidding? No.
Yeah, but I mean, I will tell you honestly, especially as I get older, why I like it and why I think it's so important is because in order for me to play with younger players, which most of the time I'm playing against younger players now, it's if my lobs are able to neutralize the players I'm playing against, you know, then I always have a chance. And the only shot that, you know, can create that possibility for me is the lob, because it gives me time, because it pushes the player a little bit farther from the attacking area. And I just think it's such a fun shot to play, because you know when you execute it properly, you feel that you are in control of things. So But of course, it's not easy, especially nowadays that everyone smashes from everywhere, Minter.
So. Right. Well, so I'm in having played with you a bit, I noticed how you can obviously do sky high lobs, but so the idea is to get the lob quickly over them somehow, and then over their wrong shoulder. So they have to maybe play a backhand shot. Is that something that you are actively, how do you actually attack, or at least, you know, look at, approach lobbing when you're playing good players?
Yeah, what you said is, I mean, there are many ways, and this is lovely to hear from you, because people just think, oh, a lob. Yeah, but the lob is very complex. Like, it can get very complex, you know. One thing is to always play to the left shoulder. Mm-hmm. Another thing, especially with professionals, Minter, is that if you play a lob and they see it, you know, because they are looking at how your racket is looking, how your body position is looking. So if they read it, they will always get behind and under the ball and they will smash. So you have to do combos. Combos as meaning you play a low shot, you step in, and maybe you play the lob with your volley. Why? Because that will take a little bit of time away from the opponent. So, I mean, there are many, many different, we can say many different lob styles. You know, there is the fast lob, there is the super high lob, if you don't play indoors, of course. But I mean, the lob is very, it's very complex, because it has many different ways to play it. And depending on the opponents, you need to play it in this way or that way.
Another thing, of course, that's different is outdoor, indoor, when it comes to the lobs, because sun, wind, outdoors, that's a big deal, right? When we saw in Valladolid, how so many of these balls were skied high and the sun was difficult. And all they did is just put, you could see these pros struggling just to push the ball back with some sort of meek bandeja.
Yes, we call it the potato shot. Yeah, just like a potato bandeja. Just put it in and then...
And you're lucky you don't screw it up, you know, right? So, all right, what about you? I mean, you're a very accomplished player for having played with you. You have all the shots, of course, you're coaching. What is the shot that you would like to improve? What's Gabo's weakness, per se?
I think I could improve every shot, but of course, one of my weaknesses, or where I'm not, you know, I don't feel so comfortable, is with the overhead game in general. It's not easy, especially when you play, you know, professionals. Remember that any shot that you execute a little bit wrong, which basically translates into my overhead being too short, the player will approach and come to the net and crush me. Or if I play a little bit too bouncy after the rebound, they will counterattack me. So that's where I could improve, especially, you know, trying to do less of those mistakes, execution mistakes. But of course, that's what makes the game so exciting, because, you know, I miss that. That's why I'm going back to competing, Inter, because I miss making a little mistake and getting punished for it. You understand? And I have to play professionals for that to happen.
Right. So, who are good enough to punish you, because I was not able to do that.
Yeah, but I think the overhead game is very complex in general.
It is.
I think that's where a lot of people should focus, also because you hit a lot of bandejas and víboras and hooks and rulos, and it's one of the shots that you use the most.
And I mean, of course, the bajada isn't an overhead, practically speaking, but it is in terms of the style. It's above your head, the bajada.
Yes, it's very similar.
Yeah. But it's another shot to have to learn as well.
Yeah, because... but the problem with the bajada is that once you play the bajada, which is okay, you might have a very good bajada and you will win a lot of points. But at the end of the day, after doing the bajada, you are back. You are in the defensive area. So then things become difficult when you lose the net, yes? Doesn't mean that you are not going to be able to win the point from the back, but for sure it's more difficult than if you actually keep the net.
Yeah, well, there comes the Spanish versus the Argentinian style and then the transition to the front. So, Gabo, in all your experience, many, you know, a dozen years now, I guess, of playing paddle, do you have a funny moment that stands out for you?
Well, actually... what I was telling you at the beginning, you know, for me, the funniest and craziest moment I had was when my friend called me, and the way I discovered paddle.
Because, the first time.
Yes, because first, the way he described it, I mean, I still remember his words of saying, nah, it's just, you just need to be at the net. It's like tennis, but on a mini court. That was his description of paddle. I mean, that's how clueless my friend was about paddle, because he has nothing to do with that. But anyway, and also it was really embarrassing, because, you know, I play against two players that I knew from tennis, and they will never even get a set from me in tennis. So of course they were like, oh, this is our time to you know, for payback. Yes. And you know, they kill us. They kill us. And it was hilarious now that I think about it, to see that, you know, they were doing lobs to me and I was thinking like a tennis player.
Tennis.
Smashing, and the guys were waiting by the net and then just did I don't know how many 4 meters. And you know, for me that was I didn't get upset. I was just laughing, trying to understand what was happening, because you know, probably you remember the first time you play padel, it's really weird. And you know, you come as a tennis player, good player in tennis, and you know, we are cocky because we are tennis players are cocky by nature. And you know, I thought I was going to rock the world there. And you know, first round, 6-0, 6-1, 30 minutes. So to me, that was hilarious. I mean, I still laugh about it when I remember. And that's probably the funniest thing that has happened to me on the padel court, to be honest.
I love it. What a good lesson. Well, speaking of lessons, what about your life lesson with regard to, I mean, sports is always a way of learning about life, but what is specific to padel for giving you, Gabo, a life lesson?
Oof. I mean, I guess one thing that has really been unique in my journey in padel is the amount of people that shares the same passion. I mean, it's not easy. You can have different hobbies, yes, but in padel it's just amazing how, for example, you probably experience this even more than me because you travel a lot, Minter, and you just go to a padel club and you will have a good time. You will play with four strangers that at the end of the 1 hour and a half, 2 hours you play, you have a drink and you become kind of like not friends, but you feel like, you know, you feel welcome. And it's a beautiful way to break the ice. I think in that way, that's what padel, that's why it has become my lifestyle. And you know, I have seen a lot of people changing their life and changing their jobs. Because they are crazy about just dedicating and devoting their life to padel. And I think there is no, like I said, it's hard for me to think of anything else in the world, sports like that, you know, will make someone leave an engineering job making 7,000 a month because you want to play padel all day. And then you are willing to make maybe 2,000 a month, but you're happy. You feel fulfilled. And I think that's what padel has shown me, that, you know, you have to do the things you're passionate about. And I think padel opens that door for a lot of people.
That's beautiful. I can't help but think, I mean, I totally agree with your assessment, but I can't help but think that some level, it's also because it's still, for some reason, esoteric. I mean, I've been playing since 1974, so I feel like I've been around. And I don't remember my first times on a court. That was too long ago. But there's still this feeling of it's new. And so we're part of the adventurers. There's also a little bit of that feeling. And I'm wondering to what extent that will diminish, you know, once it sort of becomes so popularized.
That we don't know. But yes, it's true what you say. I mean, there is, for example, anybody that wants to become a coach still has room to become a coach and to be okay. And to actually make a living coaching. I mean, many of these stories that I tell you that I have seen, I have experienced with my own skin, it's from people that, you know, they were working in a company, just normal company, in a bank, in a, whatever, in a lawyer. And then they decide to become coaches. And, you know, because the sport is new, you still have room to, you know, start from scratch and, you know, educate yourself. And build little by little your you know, your clientele, and then become a coach and actually be respected. So I think that's one of the reasons, as you said, padel is still new to the world, and you know, as you see in many places, it's just booming now. So there is still room for anyone that wants to become a padel enthusiast or coach to do business with it.
I was talking with my cousin Nali about the United States, and you know, let's say that they end up with 10,000 courts in a few years. The one of the challenging things will actually be having good paddle coaches,
yes.
Because you can't just sort of switch from tennis overnight. You've got to unlearn a whole lot of things and then relearn. And so there's a lot of opportunity there.
Yes, and the coaching mentor has, you know, that's another good subject you can talk about one day, but it has its positives and its negatives, yes? Positive because it opens the opportunities for a lot, but in the on the negative side, and we get picky about it, there is a lot of bad coaches there, yes, that already get paid enough. For example, in Sweden, for example, doesn't matter what kind of coach you are, Minter, if you start teaching tomorrow, you will charge 100 euros an hour, regardless, right. Just because the market is there, like nobody charges less, yeah? So in that way, I think eventually, hopefully the International Padel Federation does something like it has been done in tennis, where, you know, the certifications are more serious, that there is some control on who's coaching and, you know, the knowledge they have. At the moment, in that way, padel is still in diapers.
Yeah. Well, and with that knowledge, you can really, so much of it has to come through experience. To understand how to unlearn the volleying in the backcourt that tennis players do, or the desire to smash every ball, you have to go through the experience of unlearning to relearn, I think, in terms of gaining that true knowledge in your mindset, like you did. You work from, you know, being the tennis player to being now, and you're still, of course, a very good tennis player, but you have a paddle mentality. You have a paddle game. Yeah. And not every coach that plays tennis is going to get that just because they read about it or see it on on YouTube.
Exactly. And also taking the time, Inter. For example, I just told you at the beginning that I was 8 months in Argentina, day in and day out at a padel club, playing with, if a ladies match was, you know, short one player, I will join. If a professional match was short one player, I will join. I was there for whatever. Yes, I was needed. And you know, it took me about a year to actually believe that I was able to teach someone. But the problem is, some people take a three course day and, you know, then they say, okay, I'm ready. I'm going to be a coach. And then that's it. They don't care about getting more educated, or they are not humble enough to say, look, I still need to learn.
Well, I'm just hitting 60 soon, and I still think I need to learn so much more. So, Gabo, you have your Tasty Academy. You have a tremendous presence on Instagram. I would love for you to tell, just before you tell us the close off, what led you to drive the Instagram approach with your coaching? I mean, it seems like your strongest place. Maybe you're on YouTube channel as well, but you seem to do a really good job on social.
Yes, well, a lot of the social is thanks to Rika. Rika Laine is my business partner. She's a lady from Finland that probably one day you will interview. But you know, for me, it's very simple, Minter. Social media to me, and this is the way I educate my daughter with social media, is there to help others, to connect with others. And the only thing I'm trying to achieve with my Instagram is to help other padel players with what I do, with tips that I want to share. Nothing else. For example, you will never see a picture of me on my Insta, you know, showing my beautiful hair and you know, because I could be a hair model. But that to me is not important. To me, what is important is that if you follow my account, you are like, okay, this is helping me, or it's giving me a perspective on something. Then you might not like it, you might agree or not, but the only thing I want to do is I want to try to help other padel players and encourage them to do what I consider they should do, or whatever works out for me when I do it. So that's the only purpose. And I think people actually are able to feel that, because, you know, we have gotten a lot of response from people. And, you know, we don't do giveaways. We don't do anything of that to grow our community, but they still follow us. So it's beautiful to have an Instagram account where all you want to do is help others and share your passion for padel. And I think the feedback we get is very positive.
The proof is in the pudding, Gabo. So tell listeners where they can reach you, check out your Instagram account, and also eventually get a chance to learn from you.
Yes, well, the Instagram is Tasty Play Hard. Then I have my own personal Insta, which is private, and it's Coach Gabo 84. And then probably for those that are interested in maybe getting to know more about our Tasty concepts, coaching, playing, we do camps. We do camps in Sweden. We do camps in Spain. Also, we have our main location in Stockholm, in Ledap. It's a paddle club. So yeah, I mean, they can surely find us if they really wanna visit us. Yes, just like you did. I think you had a good time in Stockholm. You saw how nice the club is where we are. So
my goodness, Zurt is just a beautiful club. Panoramic courts, beautiful facilities, Mondo carpets, and you leading. So Gabo, thank you very much for coming on. As I like to sign off my podcast with a good old vamos.
Okay, Minter, thank you. The pleasure is mine, and I wish you lots of success with this podcast. I think it's very interesting, and you are a great host.
Gracias, señor.
Okay. So I hope you've enjoyed this Joy of Paddle episode. Please don't forget to subscribe to be the first in queue for the next episode. And if you like what you hear, please do share around with other paddle aficionados. This is a sport that deserves to be played by absolutely everyone. And if you got a story that you'd like to share, please send me an email, or a, better yet, a voice note at nminterdial@gmail.com. With that, thanks for listening. And see you on the next episode of the Joy of Paddle podcast. Vamos!
Women's Running Stories, where we explore the intersection between running and life. Because every woman who is committed to a running journey has a story to tell, and this is where you'll find those stories. I am host and producer Cherie Louise Turner. I'm a 53-year-old runner, and together with original music by musician and runner Cormac O'Regan, we bring these inspirational stories to life. Please join us to fuel your adventures.